You don't see this too often. Legislators over the weekend approved a $28.6 billion state budget. It was a rare weekend session, ending 3 months of negotiations, and it will provide hundreds of millions of dollars to cities and towns in order to avoid property tax increases. The budget, which we knew, is also going to include an additional $180 million for education and $100 million to distressed cities and towns. That was coming from that $500 million that the governor had set aside for emergency purposes. But I want to take a closer look at this approved budget again through the House and the Senate, chatting today with Senate Minority Leader Steve Harding. And Senator Harding, always appreciate getting your time. I was not aware you guys were going to be in session over the weekend. That was interesting.
It used to when I first started as a state rep about 10 years ago, and then the tradition has kind of gone away. And since I've been a senator, we have not gone in over a weekend. So this is the first time in the past 4 years that's happened. But in reference to the budget, I find that the budget is okay. And we could have done way more, in my opinion, for the people of this state. We spend $2 billion more this budget than we did from the previous year. $2 billion more. Not yet one cent of it got sent back to the taxpayers. Now, there's certainly investments in ECS and municipal aid, so that will obviously help with property taxes, or at least to stabilize them somewhat. So that's a good investment. That's why you did see some Republicans support it. But again, people are at home being crippled by unaffordability. We could have done way more to return money back to the taxpayers. And the other thing that I am nervous about and seeing is that this just blows right by the spending cap, and the majority is not even shy about it this time around. They used to skirt around the spending cap to say that they weren't overriding it or weren't exceeding it. They do that in this budget as well, but the difference is this time they just openly overspend it by nearly $500 million, and they say it. They're admitting it. These are the type of measures and fiscal policies that they've had in Hartford when I first got up there about a decade ago that led to back-to-back historic tax increases to mitigate deficits. And what I'm afraid of is now that these guardrails are just blatantly not being followed, that the guardrails are now dead, frankly, and we're going to lead ourselves down a road where we're going to see huge tax increases to mitigate deficits down the road, because this is the type of reckless spending we've seen before in this state.
Well, so here's kind of to your point, my concern with it, honestly, Senator Harding, is these are quick fixes. So that's kind of my bigger thing is, yes, I totally understand the guardrails. I know we've talked about it, not just, you and me. I've talked to the comptroller about it, the governor about it, both sides of the aisle, really, about the importance of staying within the guardrails. And I know there's differing opinions on it. We have the money, let's spend it. Like, I get it, all of that. But I think what's concerning to me, and I knew this would happen, not to say that I want to be right, but I knew this was going to happen. We had maybe 2 days into the start of the legislative session, you had leaders from the education sector and even municipal leaders go up to Hartford and say, we need to adjust our ECS formula. We need to do it. We haven't touched it since 2013. It's getting more and more expensive to run our public schools the way that we need to allot the amount of money per student, and we just haven't done it. And what concerned me was when the governor said, I'm going to put $180 or $190 million into education aid. First of all, hate that. And here's why I hate it. Not because I'm not grateful, but because how do you prioritize $190 million among 169 municipalities? I get it. I get that the cities need more money, but that doesn't mean that there aren't towns that also need money. So I don't know how that's being distributed. And I also don't think that is a long-term fix. To me, it reminds me of COVID, when we had all this money come in to make up for loss, but eventually that money ran out. And so then you saw the school budget cuts and you saw people getting laid off. Like, to me, this is a, hey, we know that there was a call for it. It's a huge election year. Let's give them the money. But that's not sustainable. Yeah. We're not going to get $190 million every single year to keep up with what is now being funded. You know what I'm saying?
100%, Melissa. And ECS is one of the first things that get cut once deficits come. And we're already running a deficit now in the state. Uh-huh. So to your point, it's not a long-term sustainable fix because it's nice now, particularly in an election year, But inevitably, what's going to happen, as I mentioned, we're spending now wild and recklessly, way beyond the guardrails, which are supposed to keep us in line up in the legislature. And we are inevitably going to get to a place in which we're running huge deficits, like I saw when I was up there 10 years ago. It's going to happen because this is the same exact practices that led us down this path years ago. And unfortunately, when I was up there, the first things that always would get cut would be municipal aid.
Of course.
Particularly to smaller communities, too. So that they would, Governor Malloy had an effort to reduce ECS, but it was really done almost on a political basis. You would see the towns that were getting cut in ECS, and oftentimes there were towns that were not voting for him. And I really fear that these type of practices are once again going to resume because we're going to be running deficits inevitably because, again, we're just spending recklessly beyond these guardrails. It's the only thing that has kept us in line fiscally over the years, that, and to your point, federal money that has come in and helped subsidize the budget previously, too.
I also don't know where that extra $90 million came from. So unless, and listen, I have been very open with my listeners, Senator Harding. I am not a mathematician. That's why I talk for a living. But I've done the math in my head, and this $190 million in education aid plus the $100 million going to municipal governments. And again, don't know how that's being divvied up. I know there are some people who are like, yay, this is giving us this. But I have not seen all 169 municipalities, and there's just no plausible way they're all going to get the money that they need. That's just not going to happen. But that's $290 million. Another $300 million will be deposited into the child care endowment, which was created last year. Again, free service for families making less than $100,000 a year. Get it. But you're looking at $590 million. I thought that the governor had $500 million, and he might have even tapped into that, I believe, already. So where is that money coming from? I thought this was all coming from that emergency fund that he got the rights to back in the fall.
Yeah, no, that's part of it. So he's using part of the emergency fund, but there's only $300 million remaining in that emergency fund.
Okay.
And then the other aspect of this is that they're modifying the volatility cap. So this money would have otherwise gone towards paying down the pension debt, and instead it's being diverted to contribute towards this additional spending. So that's really where the governors are getting this additional revenue from. So one is in part his $300 million governor's fund that he had that's getting depleted to go towards this. And then plus, as I mentioned, the modification in this volatility cap, which is yet again another guardrail that's now getting changed and just completely ignored and used towards more spending. The reason why we have a volatility cap is because it's volatile revenue. To your point, Melissa, as you said earlier, that means the revenue is not always going to be there. In some years, it's going to be really good because of the stock market or capital gains. In some years, it's going to plummet. And what we did for years in budgeting previously, we would budget based upon what the revenue was at that moment. And sometimes that revenue was very volatile, so that the next year came around, the revenue then inevitably dips significantly. And now all of a sudden you don't have the money to pay for these programs. And so these are the type of practices when we're modifying this volatility cap. We're now relying on all this additional municipal spending, to your point, on very volatile revenue. So that when we go back next session and that revenue may very well be depleted down, we don't have the money to pay for it.
Right.
And this is the type of problem. It's not long-term planning and budgeting necessary to lead us towards a path of success in the state.
I would have been okay, Senator Harding, and I know I'm talking out of turn. I mean, like, who am I? I'm not a lawmaker, obviously, and I'm not looking at the documents and seeing the whole breakdown. But I would have been okay with breaking guardrails if it meant, for example, adjusting the ECS formula. If it was, hey, this is what we're going to have to do, and it's going to hurt for the next X amount of years, but this is an investment we're making because we need to adjust this formula to be more in line with what students of 2026 need, and so this is what we're doing. I would have been okay with that if it meant, hey, we're going to do some surgery. This is going to take 8 to 9 hours, but your patient is going to get through it. Like, I would have been okay with the guardrails being touched if that was the scenario. I'm not okay with the idea of a quick fix because all we're doing is digging a deeper hole and we're sprinkling a little bit of dirt on top of it so nobody notices at first. But we're just going to see school budgets get cut again, and we're going to see people get laid off again, and we're going to see our property taxes go up again because we didn't fix the problem. We didn't fix it.
Right. Well, I think you're exactly right. Look, I'm going to have a discussion about modifying some aspects of this The volatility cap being one of them. But my biggest thing was make it different for people back home, right? To your point. So either, you know, completely transform ACS in a manner that would fund these schools, where property taxes would not be skyrocketing to pay for so many things, where the educational systems throughout all 169 towns, not just a few, could be able to rely on this funding long term. Or what Republicans proposed in our alternative budget was return it back to the taxpayer in the form of tax relief at a time where families are being crippled by the unaffordability crisis that we have in the state. And so it's unfortunate that really there wasn't any systematic long-term measures that would have provided a better life or more affordable life, at least for the people back home, in this budget. And that's why I said it's okay. There's things in there that I like. I like seeing more money going to the communities that I'm fortunate to represent, obviously. But at the same time, I don't like seeing it done in such a fiscally irresponsible way, number one. And number two, I don't believe that this is a transformative budget that going forward that these communities and all of us are going to be able to rely on it.
We're chatting with State Senator Steve Harding, and we were just talking about the budget, but there were a couple other things. Well, I had Senator Harding here that I wanted to ask him about. First of all, another bombshell announcement regarding CSCU, the interim chancellor having to step down. Anything on that? I mean, I'm tempted to ask Comptroller Sean Scanlon to come on to discuss this because, I mean, a bunch of things were put into place to make sure that we were monitoring how spending was going. I don't know why this interim chancellor stepped down very quickly, but it just seems like CSCU can't get out of their own way.
Yeah, I've heard rumors, but obviously until we have confirmation, you know, I don't want to say, you know, what exactly it is without it being 100% accurate and confirmed. But either way, it's not a good situation.
No,
and I think this is, again, it's starting to show, and I'm really starting to question whether it's systemic, frankly. And you figure, you know, based upon everything that's gone on with that system over the years, that those that would be there would realize, wow, we really need to step up our game and make sure that we're fully transparent. We're doing everything by the book. We're providing our students and the taxpayers throughout the state a quality, efficient, effective education system. And things are done on the up and up. It's just that simple. I mean, frankly, that should be every organization in the state that is using taxpayer funds. But unfortunately, it seems systemic. And again, Melissa, you and I talked about when we talked a week or so ago about Chancellor Chang. This is only one glaring, terrible example in a list of many, many examples throughout this administration over the past decade. And again, this boils down to the governor is a nice guy. I totally get it. He's a very nice man. But he does not do a good job controlling the day-to-day operations of the state and really cracking down on these departments when they're not being fully transparent with the people in this state. And he doesn't come out and have an aggressive enough tone in addressing this issue. I mean, he should be as angry as anybody else. This is his department. This is his state. And it's an embarrassment when things like this happen. Mm-hmm. And our taxpayers are fed up. We have the third highest tax rates in the country, and they can't even be sure that the money's going towards actually spending it effectively.
Mm. Yeah, well, speaking of that, the other thing I wanted to get your take on was recently PURA issued a rebuke to state officials rejecting a request to reconsider the sale of Aquarion. They basically were like, nope. You have no legal ground to stand on, even though the attorney general was like, yes, we do. Basically, right. That's the Cliff Notes version. But PURA was like, nope, we're going forward.
After PURA had denied it at first, too. And again, I think that I really believe that, you know, we need to look at PURA and the regulations that surround them and the regulations they have to abide by and make it more consumer friendly in terms of how they review these applications. Because that's what this comes down to, frankly. It's the reason why you saw the attorney general come out against it. It's the reason why you saw the consumer council for the state come out in heavy opposition to it as well. This is going to cost, you know, particularly the Aquarian customers, significantly in water rate increases. There's no other way to boil it down. It's fully on debt. So RWA is purchasing fully on debt with interest to purchase Aquarian, which is owned by Eversource, and they're going to be paying them a lot of money over the years. And the only way they're going to be able to recoup that money is through their new water customers. which will be now the Aquarian water customers. This is a bad deal, a raw deal for everyone involved that are ratepayers here. I really wish Tier stepped up again this time and said, no, we're denying this application.
So at this point, though, Senator Harding, what, if anything, can be done? Are there any Hail Mary moves to block the Aquarion deal or no? I mean, it's basically happening.
It gets harder by the day. We've had legal teams look into it. It doesn't look like we really can do much legislatively. That doesn't mean that we're not going to try going into next session, because this is a long-term acquisition. But we're limited legally at this point. And that's why I'm saying that one of the things that we could do or should be doing, in my opinion, is reviewing how PURA operates and the regulations that they abide by. Because, again, if you're approving deals like this and you're supposed to be an oversight board, there's not enough weight given towards what this is going to do to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And I think really that's why people would want PURA there, is to oversee this for the consumer, to make sure that the consumer is not getting screwed over, frankly. I'm just going to use to go out and say it. And I think that this is a classic example of that.
Well, Senator Harding, we definitely are going to watch the last couple of days of the legislative session. So appreciate you always making the time for WICC. And who knows what story will make you come on the next time. But I always appreciate you giving me the time.
I appreciate it as well. Talk to you soon.
All right. That is Senate Minority Leader Steve Harding here on WICC.